Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. This is your host, Cody Westerlin of 670 The Score, alongside co-host Sean Hyken of NBC Sports and Bleacher Report.
You know, as always, you can follow us on iTunes and Stitcher and leave us a five-star review. Subscribe on those platforms. Follow us on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls. Follow me on Twitter, at Hyken. Follow Cody on Twitter, at Cody Westerlund. Like us on Facebook. Send us questions there. We'll read those. Send us questions to answer on the show or advertising inquiries at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And Cody, Jimmy Butler said some stuff today.
Yes, today is all about Jimmy Butler. We are, what, 24 hours, 28 hours from free agency?
28 to 30.
But we're finding a way to tie it back to Jimmy Butler again, because I guess this is what happens when you're the franchise player of the Bulls. Everything gets tied back to you in some form or another. And it's not trade speculation now about Jimmy. Today he appeared on The Jump on ESPN2 with Rachel Nichols. And it was his first public comments, I believe, since Derrick Rose was traded. Jimmy was obviously at the Bulls practice facility the night of the draft, and he pointed out today on The Jump that he was there to get a massage after he'd had a tough workout.
Yeah, he made sure to say that it had nothing to do with the trade rumors. But the thing that, I mean, the newsworthy thing that he said on the show today was Rachel asks him, you know, what his reaction was on the Derrick Rose trade, and he said that he wasn't surprised. He said, "I can't say that I was surprised. I knew it had to be one of us, to tell you the truth. Obviously, I enjoyed playing with him. I came into the league when he was the MVP. I've got so much respect for the guy. I have no bad things to say about him. I wish him the best moving forward."
Yeah, and that was, again, his first comments about Derrick Rose. And the one that will stick out is Jimmy Butler saying, "I knew it had to be one of us, to tell you the truth." And again, I think this ties back to Derek and Jimmy didn't hate each other off the floor.
No.
They didn't have a problem.
They got along. I don't think they like hang out off the court, but I think they are friendly with each other and respect each other.
And Derek's a bit of, I guess, aloof or a loner in the sense that he's always hung out with his high school friends.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say that in a derogatory manner at all. I mean, he's family-oriented with PJ, obviously, seeing him as much as he can when he was in Chicago. And Jimmy, I mean, he has his crew as well.
The
Mark Wahlberg's in that crew as well, but it's a tight-knit group that's his trainers that have been with him for a long time and such. So this is more basketball-related, and outside observers were shocked because, again, not that Derrick Rose is gone from Chicago, but that Gar Foreman and John Paxson pulled the trigger on the deal. It didn't sound like Jimmy was as shocked about this in a basketball sense, because he did admit, he did acknowledge that he and Derrick Rose struggled on the basketball court. And he was pressed about that today, too. And he says, "I have no idea." Did you read anything into that, Sean?
I don't. And I think, you know, I tweeted out that quote, "the it had to be one of us." And I got a million people in my replies, obviously, saying, "Well, this just proves that they hated each other. And Jimmy was behind Derrick getting traded. And, like, Jimmy forced Derrick out." And I don't think that's really accurate. I think what Jimmy was really saying, and our buddy Vinny Goodwill at Comcast Sportsnet pointed this out, kind of what the context was that Jimmy kind of knew that there were going to be changes coming after the Bulls didn't make the playoffs last year. And the easiest way to make a change would be to trade one of the two very highly paid and ball-dominant guards that couldn't play very well together last year. And if they were given the choice and they could get stuff back for both of them, the Bulls would probably, he didn't say this, but this is just the truth, they would rather trade Derrick Rose than Jimmy Butler, because Jimmy Butler is going to have more value going forward.
Yeah, that's a basketball decision on the floor there. Better contract to younger player. But another reason Jimmy probably wasn't shocked was because the Bulls have a difficult time getting a hold of Derrick Rose on the telephone via text message in any sense of the imagination. It's a lot easier to get a hold of Jimmy. And he said of his relationship with the Bulls, he said, "It's good. We talk. I can't say we talk about everything because we don't talk about everything. But I think most of the important things, I get a phone call or a text message, and we'll talk about it. They'll take my opinion on some things, but I'm still just a player. So Jimmy is not in the way that Steph Curry's part of the Warriors basketball decision-making, probably, but Jimmy does have a voice in the Bulls organization, if any player does. Wouldn't you agree, Sean?
I think if Jimmy was adamantly opposed to trading Derrick Rose, they wouldn't have done it. I don't think Jimmy went to the front office and said, okay, you guys have to trade Derrick. But when this is just purely my speculation based on those comments and just based on kind of what makes sense. They probably, you know, said to Jimmy, hey, you know, we have this deal lined up with the Knicks. We can get Robin Lopez and Jaren Grant back. What do you think of this? And Jimmy probably just said, if you guys think this is what's best, go for it.
Yeah, and those aren't guys that are going to be ball dominant or steal any thunder from him, so it makes sense, too, for Jimmy. And, you know, you look down the line, too, because there's been so much trade speculation with Jimmy. And he didn't sound like he took it personally. It didn't sound like he needed his feelings soothed over from draft night being in so many trade rumors. He said, quote, I love the city of Chicago. Chicago basketball, I think everybody knows that. They drafted me. I've been here my entire career. He did add, though, of course, when the program asked him, will he be a Bull all season long for the long term? He said, nothing's for certain.
Well, nothing is for certain. And whatever Gar Forman wants to pretend to the contrary, they did listen on those talks on draft night. They have not completely closed the door on trading him. Again, you know, I think what Gar said is correct. They would have to be absolutely blown away with an offer to do it, but there's no saying that that's not going to happen at some point.
Yeah, and I do think that, obviously, this is Jimmy Butler's team now. A lot is on his back moving forward, and he's going to be the focal point, he and Fred Hoiberg, whether the Bulls have a successful season in 2016-17. That brings up the question from Wesley on Twitter. What is considered a success for the Bulls in 2016-17? Is it in terms of games? Is it Gar Forman getting fired? He asked. What exactly is that?
Just to be clear, that is it Gar Forman getting fired? That was part of the question that was posed to us. I don't think you can really judge success by that. I think the Bulls would view this season as successful if they got back to the playoffs after not making the playoffs last year. That's something they are very proud of. Gar loves to talk about the fact that the Bulls have had the best record in the Eastern Conference over the last 10 years. They've made the playoffs, I think, 8 of the last 10 years or something like that.
Yeah, they had a string of 7 before they missed it.
Here right, and that, you know, and then they missed the playoffs the year they drafted Rose, but other than that, they had been pretty consistent. I don't think they want to be a lottery team again, and especially, you know, knowing Jerry Reinsdorf, he doesn't really want to miss out on that playoff revenue. So I think the Bulls would consider this season a success if they made it back into the playoffs.
Yeah, and in less of a, I guess, basketball sense or wins and losses term, I would say if Jimmy and Fred can have a really strong relationship.
And there's no off-the-court stuff.
Yeah, know what they want to do offensively from a focal point, and Jimmy embracing everything Fred does, that would be a success. That would be good progress, a good jumping-off starting point for 2017-18. And again, that's a ways off, but I guess this ties back to Mike on Twitter. Over, under 25 wins for the Bulls next season.
Over.
I have over as well.
I have a hard time seeing a team that has Jimmy Butler and at least competent NBA players around him. They don't have any great players around him, but everybody that they have is at least a decent rotation player for the most part. I don't know if I don't want to put a win total on what they think the Bulls would do, you know, before we see what they do in free agency and how the rest of the Eastern Conference shakes out and how the rest of the picture might look. But 25 is low. I think somewhere in the mid-30s is a little bit more realistic.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler would have to have a serious injury and miss a lot of time for the Bulls to go under 25 wins, I think. I mean, he's a two-time All-Star, a guy that can still win you games against some really good teams like he did last year against the Raptors, some really bad teams when he went for, what, 53, I think,
against
the 76ers.
Philly, yeah.
Yeah, so you got to keep that in mind. Another one, will anyone in the organization address the frustration Jimmy must be having been dangled on the trade market, from Son of Zod on Twitter?
You know, it sounds like from everything Jimmy has said, both today on The Jump and just over whenever, you know, on the Bill Simmons podcast and whenever anybody else has asked him about it, he doesn't seem like he really takes this stuff personally, and he kind of gets it. And then one thing that Gar Forman said after, you know, both in the press conference after he traded Derrick Rose and in the press conference after the draft when asked if he talks to players about rumors, he says that they don't really talk to the players about rumors, because if they talk to them about all the rumors and then there's one rumor they don't talk to them about, then the player is going to wonder, wait, is this one true? Is there legs to this one?
Yeah, and it's, I don't think you want to get into addressing every rumor. I think the Bulls probably, someone probably explained the Celtics situation to Jimmy Butler, because as much as Gar Forman denied it on draft night, I mean, Jimmy's smart. He reads the newspaper if he needs to. He reads Twitter. He reads the headlines on the internet.
Hopefully, and he listens to the Lock on Bulls podcast to get the latest information about the Bulls on a daily basis.
If he subscribes, that would be terrific. If you subscribe, even better. But if you see Jimmy, tell him to subscribe.
Jimmy Butler, please leave us a 5-star review.
Absolutely. But so I don't know. It's interesting. Another question from Inner City Youth. Once the Bulls miss the playoffs this coming season, how much longer until Paxton, Foreman, and Hoiberg get the boot? Sean, we just said we expect them to at least be mid-30s wins. Is the playoffs a breaking point for them, and where do you think everyone's job standing and stature in the organization stands?
Well, I think John Paxson probably has a lifetime pass. He's a Reinsdorf OG. Like, I can't imagine him being let go unless he decides to step down for some reason. So that's that one. I think there's a pretty good chance that Gar might be next on the chopping block if the Bulls miss the playoffs again. Fred, I really can't see them letting go of anytime soon. Remember, he just signed a 5-year deal. He just completed the first year of his 5-year deal. This is year two. The Bulls were already paying two coaches last year after they fired Tom Thibodeau with 2 years left on his deal. They're not going to have to pay him this year because his deal with Minnesota offsets that money. But Jerry Reinsdorf in the past has been really reluctant to pay people to not work for him. So it would have to be a complete implosion for them to really consider firing Fred Hoiberg over the next 2 years. If you're taking odds about which one of those three guys might be next to go, it would be Gar Forman, but I can't even really see that happening unless this season completely falls apart and they miss the playoffs.
Yeah, Fred's got 4 years left on his contract and about $20 million left probably, because it's about $5 million annually.
I don't know how much of that back end is guaranteed or anything like that, or team options, and it might be easier to get out of it before then, but I've, at least the next couple of years, unless it's like a... So you remember, like, in the mid-2000s, like the early 2010s, like when all the Pistons players just completely quit on John Kuster in the middle of the season, they had to fire him. It would have to be that kind of a situation for them to fire Fred with that much time left on his contract.
You are really digging up old, obscure NBA names.
Again, shout out to Vinny Goodwill. He lived through that era.
There you go. And the Bulls obviously hope Fred doesn't become an obscure NBA name, because it is something that I wonder about. If the Bulls do come out of the gates really bad, I think people are coming to terms, coming to grips with this isn't going to be as good of a team this year, because it is kind of year one of a rebuild, or at least a complete reset on the organization. It's going to be really interesting to see if the Bulls start 4-12, if they start 6-18, like, what's just kind of the temperature in the city?
At that point, do they maybe, if they just really start off badly, they realize, okay, this is not going to work, do they then think about maybe putting Jimmy back out there and fielding offers for him again? That might be the kind of thing where, like, they were hoping they could keep it together and, you know, give this a run and, like, you know, retool. Gar keeps calling it a retool, not a rebuild. If the season really just starts off the rails, like, what is that going to mean? Maybe they decide to maybe try to, you know, kick the tires on dealing Jimmy again, or maybe Fred's job is in danger again. I can't imagine that's going to happen, because Fred's got so much time left on his deal that they would have to pay him if they fired him.
Yeah, and you got to remember, I mean, Gar Forman still thinks that Fred Hoiberg is a good basketball
That's his
coach.
Guy.
That's his guy. Fred does have some, he's proved his basketball smarts at the collegiate level. He's got to do that at the NBA level, but he has a bright mind. Now, you know, shifting the focus and kind of adjusting to the NBA game is a complete different challenge for a coach, and that's what he has to do. But yeah, that's an excellent point as far as what the start of the season means for the Bulls. It means a lot for Jimmy Butler, probably. And as for who's playing alongside Jimmy Butler, like we said, we're about 28 hours before free agency starts or whatnot. FlyTheW.com on Twitter asks, why add any free agents at all if you're the Bulls? Why not roll out Jimmy Butler and company and get a point guard in next year's draft? Now, I don't know the point guard part next year's draft. I'd worry specifically looking into that. But the first part of the question, why add free agents at all?
You got to spend the money on somebody. Every single team. And again, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Some of the deals that guys are going to get, casual fans who maybe don't understand what's going on with the salary cap, are just going to be blown away by some of the deals that, you know, who you would think of as a role player is going to get. the thing is, there's a salary floor, which is 85% of the salary.
90%, I believe now.
Is it 90 now? Yeah. I thought it was 85. No, it's 85 million is the number.
That's
so they have to spend up to that at least. Or else, you know, if they don't, I mean, there's not like a hard punishment for doing that. They just have to pay that money out to the other players on the roster. But, you know, they don't want to be just so non-competitive that they're not spending money on. And I also, as far as like focusing on the draft, I just can't see this organization having the stomach to say, you know what, we're going to punt on this year. We're going to just go for a good draft pick.
Yeah, and this is the token time where you got to chime in and be like, Jerry Reinsdorf always does with the White Sox, his ownership group there, where they try to be competitive every year on the field, even when rebuilding from the ground up might make the most sense. So, I mean, the Bulls
got to get
always,
that playoff revenue.
Yep, you Bulls have always been competitive or in that competitive mode here in the last decade or so, ever since, I guess, they drafted Derrick Rose, more or less, and even before that. But another question from Jess on Twitter. The Bulls have about $25 million in salary cap space as of right now, but 20-plus teams in the NBA also have that much or more. How far below the cap can they start the year? Now, we just referenced at some point they got to get to around $85 million.
But they have until the entire – they have the whole year. If they start the season way under the salary floor, they can take on money in trades during the season. As long as they have that money on their books by the end of the season, they're okay.
And again, it's not a tough penalty because if you don't reach $85 million, say you reach $80 million, you just divide that $5 million up among the players on your team who would actually be happier – for getting more money at the end of the year. But still, I mean, it's just a practice and principle and such. Teams go for that salary floor. Pretty much everyone does it. So the Bulls have to spend the money on somebody. Now, if you take the question another way, how much salary cap space could they conceivably clear? Mike Dunleavy and Taj Gibson contracts could come off because they're kind of on the trade block, it seems.
Right. Right now, assuming the cap stays at $94 million, which is what the latest projection is, they have about $25 million in cap space to play with. If they literally just gave away Taj Gibson and Mike Dunleavy and got nothing back, if they just gave away those contracts to somebody, took back no money, they could get to about $39.9 million under the cap.
Yeah, and they got to spend this on somebody, and we had a great free agency preview podcast yesterday.
Go check it out.
We didn't get to every name in the NBA that was on the free agency list on the open market, and I know a few of you have questions about people we didn't address. One from Trenton on Twitter, should the Bulls go after Ben McLemore? Sean, your thoughts?
Well, that's an interesting one because the Bulls had discussions with Sacramento at the trade deadline about Pau Gasol going to Sacramento. And it's as part of a larger trade, I think the idea was that Ben McLemore would be coming back. And the Kings, for some reason, are, I guess, high on Tony Snell. So I could see them revisiting a Tony Snell for Ben McLemore swap, both teams taking a flyer on a guy who has 1 year left on his rookie contract. That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But Ben McLemore hasn't really shown that much at the NBA level. I know he was a high lottery pick, but that's not a kind of guy I would go out of my way to go after.
They were high on Tony Snell. We don't exactly know the temperature on their interest today.
What's changed between this year's trade deadline? We all knew that Tony Snell's not good before the trade deadline.
That's true.
It's not like Tony was playing well before the deadline and then fell off a cliff. He's been terrible all year.
A couple other wings we wanted to throw out there are guys who fit in the 2-3-3-4 mold are the Portland Trailblazers restricted free agents.
Allen Crabbe and Mo Harkless. And I like both of those guys. I think both of those guys would be good additions, and you could probably they probably will command pretty reasonable prices, but my only concern with that, and also with another guy we were going to talk about in a second, Evan Fournier, the Blazers are so far under the salary cap that they could probably match basically any deal that another team throws at any of their restricted guys. They could keep all of their restricted guys and still have max cap space to sign somebody else if they decided to get in on like Hassan Whiteside or Dwight Howard or something. So I can't imagine the kind of offers that you would have to throw up Mo Harkless or Allen Crabbe to make the Blazers even blink when it comes to matching.
Yeah, and remember, restricted free agency can be a little complicated in the fact that you give a restricted free agent an offer sheet, they sign it, and the team who owns their rights, who they played for previously, has 72 hours to match that. So you're kind of in flux. You're just kind of floating in the water, not sure what you're going to do next. So it can be a little difficult.
It's especially in this free agent class when so many deals are going to be flying around. If you spend 3 days of this free agency period waiting on the Blazers to decide whether they're going to match Allen Crabbe or the Magic to decide whether they're going to match your offer on Evan Fournier, in that 72 hours, while your cap space is tied up in those guys, some other guys that you, unrestricted guys that you may have been interested in signing, are going to go off the board.
Yeah, and it's interesting to look back at the two free agency classes. In 2014, summer 2014, we were waiting on a LeBron answer, and he took to like July 11th or something to give it. So it was a really slow developing free agency class and period because the biggest domino hadn't fallen yet. So it kind of tied everyone else up, took forever. Last year, I think it was Anthony Davis signed his max extension at 12:01 a.m. or whatnot.
And then, like, Al-Farouq Aminu's deal got done, like, 20 minutes later. And then the next day, like, there was a steady... Obviously, if you waited a few days for the LaMarcus Aldridge domino to fall, that was the big one. But there were, you know, steadily July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, there were steadily guys getting deals. And I think we're going to see the same thing. We know which six teams Kevin Durant is meeting with. Everybody has their contingency plans. So that, you know, what team Durant is going to sign with doesn't really affect most teams in the league.
Yeah, we expect free agency to move more like 2015 this year, just because that's kind of the speculation and stuff. And as Sean said, Kevin Durant's kind of narrowed his window down. And, you know, that's why it's going to be difficult with restricted free agency tying up that cap space for a little bit. But another guy, another question from DeBull on Twitter. What are the chances of the Bulls offering and or Dwayne Wade taking a one-year, $18 million deal with the Chicago Bulls?
Now, for context, Brian Windhorst at ESPN reported yesterday that his yearly tradition that Dwayne Wade is unhappy with the direction that the negotiations on a new deal have gone with the Heat, and he's open to considering other offers. He's not going anywhere. It's going to be the exact same thing. The same reports came out last year that he was seriously thinking about leaving because he felt disrespected by the offers that he got from the Heat. On the second day of free agency, they did a one-year, $20 million deal. Now, I mean, I can't imagine Dwayne Wade actually leaving Miami. Like, this, no, he's, it would be interesting. I'm certainly, as someone who covers the team, I would be for that. It would give us something to talk about. It would be interesting, but he's not going anywhere.
If he does leave Miami, I still wouldn't see the Bulls anywhere near the top of his list because it just doesn't match up for what he wants to do. I mean, he wants to contend for championships.
They have another ball-dominant shooting guard who can't shoot, though.
Yep, he wants to contend for championships at this point in the career. He wants to be the focal point in the backcourt. That's not what Chicago would provide for him. Dan via email asked, I'm surprised you guys didn't bring up Jeff Green on your last podcast, the free agency preview. What do you think of him in free agency for the Bulls?
I mean, if there's nobody else available and you don't have to overpay for him, I guess it's fine. Let me ask you, what is Jeff Green great at?
I can't think of anything at this point in his career.
He's one of those guys who's okay at a lot of things. There's not one skill he has that he's elite at. He's passable at enough things that, you know, you can talk yourself into him, but he would not be a guy that I would make a priority of going after in free agency, and certainly not if he's asking for the kind of money that he's probably going to be asking for.
Yeah, and the Bulls have the logjam at power forward. You put him at the three, he's not a great outside shooter, not a great dribble penetrator, creator by any means. So, again, just invest in those young guys you kind of got. Bobby Portis at power forward. You got Doug McDermott on the wing getting some minutes at three probably. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bulls again play small next year more often, with even Doug McDermott getting some power forward minutes again. And I think Hoiberg mentioned that last year. That was a little bit of talk, and then the season kind of went haywire, and there was off-the-court drama, on-the-floor drama, and nothing meshed. But that's an option, too, for the Bulls, if you think about it.
Yeah, and Jeff Green is just kind of redundant. He's a more expensive version of some of the guys that they already have without as much upside.
Yeah. Jordan on Twitter says, what positions need to be addressed most in free agency? I think we've touched on this one.
Yeah, right now I think Jose Calderon is slated to be their starting point guard, so they could definitely use an upgrade there.
Yeah, and we threw out Jeremy Lin's name yesterday. We threw out the hypothetical Bulls look at a Patrick Beverley trade with the Rockets if Daryl Morey gets an itchy trigger finger and wants to make some moves.
Yeah.
The next week or two.
Or on a little bit less realistic scale, you know, talk to Phoenix about Brandon Knight. This is something we've touched on a lot.
Yeah, and we'll finish it off, too, with this Twitter question. Second part from Jordan. With the guard position in flux a little bit, but several of them on the roster, none of them stars, obviously.
Except
who,
Jimmy.
Who do the Bulls get rid of in the backcourt? Or will they get rid of anyone? And obviously, we talked before, could they waive Jose Calderon and stretch him and open up about $5 million more of cap space? Doesn't make a lot of sense to do that with the current free agent market and the Bulls having money already and not great players there. Plus, Gar Foreman and Fred Hoiberg have both lauded his outside shooting, his three-point shooting. So it seems like he's in the picture for now.
I think that's the plan at this point. You know, another part of the question that was posed, it was, you know, could the D-League be an option for somebody like a Spencer Dinwiddie or Denzel Valentine or Jaron Grant? And yeah, I mean, the thing that's kind of under-talked about is the Bulls, starting this fall, are going to have their own D-League franchise in Hoffman Estates. So I think, you know, if the season starts out and Denzel Valentine isn't maybe getting as many minutes as they're anticipating, since they're in a suburb, they don't really have to send him off on a plane to go play in the D-League. They can send him off to practice with the team. Yeah, I think you're going to see those guys, all three of those young guards, spend some time in the D-League, whether it's for an extended stretch or just going there to practice on off days or playing in a few games here and there.
Yeah, I don't think Valentine will too much, just because I really think they need him next year, and I guess, for lack of a better term, the big league club. At the United Center and Advocate Center. But, I mean, the Bulls have referenced that before. They could have got Cristiano Felicio last year a lot more playing time if they had their own D-League team close by, which they do now in Hoffman Estates, about an hour away. I believe he went to the Canton Charge, had to go to Ohio last year to get minutes in the D-League, I think.
It was a little bit tricky last year because the Bulls didn't have their own D-League affiliate team. And so for the teams that don't have their own affiliate teams, you have to just send them to whichever team around the D-League has space. And then it's not your coaches and your system and your organization that's controlling it. So it's kind of weird. I think it's going to be good for the organization that they have their own D-League squad now.
Yeah. So, again, we'll find out a little bit more about that when free agency wraps up, I guess. And we have a kind of like the Bulls in free agency. We have a tentative plan. We want to do maybe podcast Friday night reacting to day one.
We don't like to skip weekdays, but I think our logic for tomorrow is that, you know, just a little bit of inside baseball. By the time we get this recorded and edited and posted, it's usually around 6:30 or 7 p.m. Central Time. And tomorrow night, free agency starts at 11 p.m. Central Time. So if we do a podcast, first of all, we've kind of covered just about every real free agency topic there is to cover. But if we do another episode tomorrow, then everything that we cover is going to be out of date 4 days after we do it. So we're just going to, you know, let the first few hours of free agency play out and then come back on Friday with another episode assessing kind of the first few deals and, like, what that means for the Bulls and if they make any moves.
Yep, and as always, we'll play it by ear, too, over the weekend if the Bulls do anything big. Or it's within the realm of possibility they just bring Etuan Moore back and make another low-profile addition or something. But as always, email us with questions, basketball or advertising-related questions at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at lockedonbulls, at Hyken, at Cody Westerlin.
And subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio and leave us 5-star reviews.
Catch you next time, folks.